Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is Travis Loop, the host, and today's episode is going to focus on the issue of affordability in water. And here to help us explore this issue a little bit is Mike Matidich from Jacobs. He leads the financial services consulting team for Jacobs and brings more than 30 years of experience in utility rate and financial management, with a lot of experience in conducting financial capability, rate impact, and affordability studies for water, wastewater, and stormwater. Mike, thank you so much for finding some time to chat.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. So for our listeners, could you just kind of give a basic explanation of what we mean when we say affordability in the water sense?
Yes. And it's important to distinguish affordability is not financial capability, which is financial capability is the ability of a city or a jurisdiction to pay for a whole capital program. Affordability is really at the household level. It's, can everyone who needs essential water and sewer and stormwater service pay for that essential level of service that they need?
Okay, so this is very much about the consumer,
yes.
About the resident that then gets that water bill, and how well can they afford to pay that bill?
Yes.
Okay. We're here at this affordability symposium put on by the Water Environment Federation and American Water Works Association. So there's a real focus. There's a couple hundred people here from across the country to dig into all aspects of affordability. You've got 30 years of experience in the field. What's your sense? Do you think attention on the affordability issue is at an all-time high right now, or where does it stand compared to your work in the field?
It's higher than it was even 10 years ago, but it needs even more visibility. I mean one of the reasons that it's at a higher level than it has been is, a number of the cities, particularly on the wastewater side, that have negotiated consent orders for combined sewer overflow and sanitary sewer overflow issues, the implementations of those programs are progressing to the point where the combination of those regulatory drivers and the need to renew and replace aging assets is causing utilities to have to step up the level of spending. So the bills necessarily have to get higher
mm-hmm.
at a time when households continue to be squeezed at the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum, low-income households are challenged in paying for housing and other basic services.
Mm-hmm.
And so it because of that combination of the necessary increases in spending to meet regulatory drivers and the need to keep up these aging systems that are wearing out, the bills have to go up.
Yeah, and so utilities are really looking at how to increase revenue, and rates is one of the big ways to do that. But utilities are aware of this affordability issue of those lower income ratepayers, and that increasing rates is a challenge for them, or paying those increased rates is a challenge for those residents.
Yeah, and so the importance of creating customer assistance programs to help the people at the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum is more important than ever. That as utilities face, in some cases, double-digit rate increases, creating some programs that protect people at the bottom of the spectrum is not only critical in providing basic services that people need to live, but it's critical to getting support from the governing boards and the governing bodies that won't be prepared to approve the rate increases that are needed if there isn't some protection for low-income households at the bottom end of the spectrum.
Elaborate on that a little bit, like customer assistance programs. What do those generally look like?
Yeah, and at the symposium, the next couple of days, we've got some really great case studies that illustrate some examples. City of Portland, Oregon, has had one of the most robust programs in place and is presenting next couple of days on some of the enhancements that they've made based on, you know, studying some of the things that they're doing. But in a lot of cases, it includes a combination of elements. You know, there may be bill discounts for people who qualify based on a combination of household size and income criteria. And a lot of communities partner with the social service agencies that implement the, there's this low-income assistance for heating that is actually a federally funded program for people who can't afford to heat their homes in the winter and need that basic help. And so there's a structure in place to figure out who qualifies in a given metropolitan area based on size of household and income level. And many utilities that implement bill discounts for water and sewer systems partner with the social service agencies that administer those programs that are called the LIHEAP programs and provide bill discounts. You know, for example, Cleveland Division of Water and NURSD, the wastewater agency in Cleveland, provide like a 40% bill discount for people who qualify based on meeting the criteria for the energy assistance in their area. So that's providing bill discounts is an important element, but there are other key programs. You know, many utilities provide water audit support where they'll go and try to figure out if there's leaky appliances or look to help households be smarter in their use of water to reduce their bills. And in fact, Portland is an example that I mentioned earlier of one that, in addition to providing that water audit service, they have a program where they partner with like retired plumbers, and they've got a program that up to a certain dollar amount, they will help provide appliance and plumbing repairs to help households reduce their use of water. And there are other also things like helping people to get onto payment plans and people who are in a crisis situation. I mean, there's some low-income customers who need ongoing assistance because their level of income doesn't support their being able to pay all of their essential utility bills. But there are some people who, if someone has lost a job or they've had a change in marital status, there's a divorce, and suddenly you have someone that's trying to support a family without an income or less income. And so there are opportunities for crisis vouchers or emergency short-term support that some utilities also provide.
Yeah, very, very interesting. And like you said, there's a lot of good case studies out there that people can look at, and we'll be sharing during this symposium. One of the presentation that you're giving is about turning research on affordability into action. We'd like a little preview here. what's your presentation about? What's the substance there?
Sure. And I'm part of a session that's actually being organized by the Water Research Foundation, and it is showcasing two important studies that were released in the last year that are examples of progress in research and affordability. I mean, one talks about like how do you provide help to people who live in apartments or in condo complexes where the bill goes to the owner of a master meter, and you don't actually have a direct customer relationship, maybe with a renter who is low income and needs help. And how do you find ways to get assistance to those types of customers? The other research project that's being presented in the session that I'm speaking in identify some of the regulatory and legal challenges in many states, that there are laws or regulations that the public service commissions that have to approve rates in a lot of states are restricted. And it's probably half the states where there are challenges in creating some of those bill discount programs that I was talking about earlier, where there's a requirement to follow a strict cost of service basis in establishing rates. And when you provide a discount to low income based on income, that's not based on the actual cost of providing service. And so, so my presentation talks about, we've got this really important research that's come out, and there are other sessions at the symposium that are showing like how to measure affordability, some real progress in university research projects that have been done, that, you know, it's not enough to just fill a bookcase and say, well, yeah, we've studied all these issues and we now know that half the states have legal challenges and we know that, you know, that there's a lot of new innovations in how you can structure customer assistance. Putting those books on the shelf doesn't accomplish anything. That you really need to publicize it and take action in some cases on it. And so in my presentation, I talk about some of the work, and one of my roles is I lead the subcommittee on affordability within AWWA's Rates and Charges Committee. And one of the things that we've done is to update the guidance documents. You know, the AWA publishes a guidance document, Principles of Water Rates, Charges, and Fees, the M1 manual. That's essentially the how-to book for developing rates. And one of the things that our subcommittee did last year was to update the chapter on affordability programs to reflect a lot of the innovations and a lot of the research that has come out. US EPA has this new Water Office Finance and Resiliency, and they did some research and put out a compendium of the different kinds of customer assistance programs that utilities are able, you know, are using around the country. But again, getting the word out and getting that array of options out there for people to consider is critical. And so in updating the guidance documents and in publishing articles in, you know, the WEF journal and the AWA journal and, you know, in the publications to get the word out on this important research is critical. But there's another really, something that I'm really excited about, actually, that was announced in the plenary session today, is that one of the things that our subcommittee worked on, and it's been working its way through four or five levels within the AWA, you know, went to a multi-council committee and then went for review by the six councils at AWA, and I'm hoping it will also be reflected and maybe endorsed and looked at by WEF and NACWA and the other associations. Is AWA released just last Friday, in time for discussion here at the symposium, a policy statement on affordability that identifies the importance of affordability, but also the commitment of the membership to supporting actions that will enable utilities around the country to be able to address the affordability issue with less shackles, you know, less confined. So some of those state regulatory issues, documenting in a report that they exist is important.
Sure.
Because prior to that report that was published, that's being presented this afternoon, there was only anecdotal evidence about some of those constraints. And now the book is published, but the policy statement is one of the steps of the process to maybe enable state legislatures and public service commissions to take the action to give utilities around the country the ability to implement customer assistance programs.
I mean, those policy statements, that's what WEF and AWWA do. We advocate for the water sector. So we are saying, hey, this is an important issue. Here is a policy statement on it. Here's a way that we should go, something we collectively, society, legislators should support. And then here is this, the other documents that you referred to. There are ways to do this. This is what is possible. So, you know, let's clear the way and put those things in action.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
The state issue is something that really interests me. You mentioned about half have, you know, regulations, laws that, you know, kind of prohibit some of that customer assistance, those programs. There's also a session here on state issues and affordability. That looks at how affordability can vary greatly from state to state and how that presents different challenges. So in your moderating that session, seemed like a good person to be doing that. Let's dig into that a little bit more. What it's split about, these 25 states, has there been any movement by states to lessen those restrictions, or is that something that's hopefully in the works, or has it moved the other way? What's kind of the landscape look like?
Well, because of the increased attention to affordability, there's some movement, but again, that report documents challenges in at least half the states or mm-hmm. more. But one of the speakers in the session that I'm moderating this afternoon, Max Gomberg from the state of California, is presenting on a statewide affordability plan. And so California took the initiative, because of the perceived importance of this issue, to direct the state agency to create a statewide plan. Mm. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what that includes, you know, what was learned in trying to think about, if you think of state of California, the diversity of income levels and just sizes of water and sewer and stormwater systems within the state. Like, how do you create a construct for planning to address the issue, and how specific can you get at the state level in terms of identifying how you measure what's affordable and what's not, and how you provide assistance to people? But the fact that the state is, you know, directed its agency to develop a plan is a breakthrough. I think it's really interesting. And the, you know, one of the other speakers is Denise Schmidt from the state of Wisconsin, who works for the Public Service Commission, which is one of the states that has some of the challenges. Mm. And so she's going to talk
about... They have restrictions.
Yeah. And so she's going to talk about what they're able to do and what they're not able to do in terms of allowing utilities ability to use user fees, for example, to pay for bill discounts to customers. And states vary in the degree of regulation. And so part of my interest in having, you know, asked Denise to be part of this session is Wisconsin is one of the most heavily regulated, in that the state has to approve the rates and charges for every single water utility. Mm. And there's some interval in which they have to be involved where the utility has to file with the state a request for a rate increase. Mm. And unlike, you know, many states where it's up to the city council or the, you know, the regional commission, and then the state will get involved maybe only if somebody files a complaint or raises an issue. In Wisconsin, every single community, large and small, their rates are regulated.
Is there another state that's like that?
There are others that are close, but Wisconsin is...
Yeah.
Defines the ends of the spectrum.
Gotcha.
And one of the challenges is that their charter is one of these charters that says rates need to be based on cost of service. And so when you say we're going to create a program and fund it by, you know, based on a perceived community importance of providing support to the low income customers, that's a deviation from strict cost of service rate making. And that's where people like Denise, I believe, are looking forward to the policy statement, you know, by AWWA, and maybe if WEF and other organizations camp onto it and create supporting statements as evidence that the industry believes it important to be able to address the challenges that low-income customers face.
Very, very interesting. And I guess looking... The idea of looking at the variability across states helps because why? It shows, again, here's ways to do things. Here's what the challenges are. It just informs the whole sector when we look at the variability from state to state.
Yeah. When we see, you know, systems like the Portland program that I mentioned or the Cleveland program that I mentioned, where people are successfully able to give 20% bill discounts, and we see it being effective in helping people at the low end of the socioeconomic spectrum being able to survive and pay for essential service. Well, what we see, because of this patchwork of different regulations, that utilities everywhere can't take advantage. They can come to sessions like the symposium and hear great case studies and then go back and say,
Too bad
we can't do something like that in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. because our Public Service Commission can't approve us to do something.
Yeah.
Like that. And so that's where understanding what's going on in different states is important, and where this research project that AWA, WEF, NACWA, and a number of the associations sponsored that's being presented this afternoon on the legal pathways, you know, creates that document that it makes it more than just anecdotal evidence, and it's something that we can now act on as an industry.
Sure. I want to shift gears a little bit and say, U.S., is this just an issue in the United States, or what's kind of the global situation, you know, especially in other developed countries when it comes to affordability?
It's a universal worldwide challenge, and I know that in part because I've done some work for some international funding agencies, and what we find in looking around the world is in Europe and in Australia there are challenges that are equivalent to the challenges that we're seeing here in terms of the need to replenish aging systems, because in many other countries the systems were developed
around the same time
because of growth of the economies
and just the emergence of the technology and so forth.
Absolutely. And in fact, there was a day-long symposium in Brussels about a year and a half ago, where the European Union countries came together to share case studies and address the challenges that they see, and try to share solutions and look for ways collectively to provide essential service to all customers. And in fact, there is a session tomorrow afternoon on international challenges that, you know, features some input from Australia, that, you know, features actually from, you know, some of the developing countries that where there are even more significant affordability challenges. And so there are two speakers from the Millennium Challenge Corporation that provides essentially grants to developing countries to address important infrastructure needs. And so they'll provide water treatment or wastewater treatment support, but they want to make sure that once these systems are built that they can be sustained. Mm. And one of the ways of making sure that they're sustained is making sure that there's a path for, you know, generating the revenue that's needed to support the systems, and making sure that there's something that is affordable that customers will actually pay the bills to keep these systems running once they're built is a critical component. And so, yeah, everywhere from, you know, Europe to developing countries, there's the important thing is we have lessons that we can learn, not just by sharing our information within North America, which is the predominant focus of this two-day symposium, but there are lots of really useful lessons that we can bring to U.S. utilities and Canadian utilities from the experience in Europe and Australia and elsewhere.
One other angle here is public versus private utility. And I'm just curious about the approaches that public and private utilities may take to affordability. 85% of utilities, water utilities in the U.S. are public, I believe, roughly around that. So what are you seeing there?
Well, I think that both public and private utilities recognize the importance of the affordability issue, and, you know, as there have been research projects around this issue, there's been interest in participating in research projects by both public and private utilities. Most private utilities are directly regulated by states, because they're providing a public good. And so even in those states where the rate setting is left largely to a city council or to a regional board where you don't have that Wisconsin sort of direct oversight of public rates, public utility rates, in almost every state there is direct regulation of private utility rates, where the private companies that operate systems have to go in and request a rate of return and do a rate filing. And as part of that process, again, some of the public service commissions are hamstrung or find themselves challenged to allow utilities to implement bill discount programs or customer discount programs, because the governing context for their regulation is that cost should be based on cost of service principles. And so in some cases, that reform that I was talking about earlier, it's important to keep in mind the somewhat different situation that private utilities are in. And in some cases, private utilities they've been creative in finding ways to enable them to make some of the investments that they need to renew and replace their aging systems. Like there'll be a surcharge that relates to renewing and replacing the aging collection and distribution system assets that isn't necessarily part of the strict ongoing rate-making process. And just as there's been creativity in enabling some of those expenditures to be made, I think there needs to be some further thought about enabling, making sure that we don't forget about those customers, those 15% of the population that's served by private water companies, mm-hmm. when we're thinking about enabling utilities to provide assistance to low-income customers.
Yeah, absolutely. Last thing I wanted to ask you about that popped into my head was Philadelphia's approach, which has been seen as unique. And could you kind of briefly describe that and share whatever perspective you have on how it's going?
Well, and there is actually a plenary session at this symposium tomorrow morning on what's up in Philadelphia on affordability.
Yeah.
And as a member of the planning committee for this two-day symposium, there's a deliberate reason that that is a plenary session, is that we didn't want to put anybody in the position of having to compete with that session, because everybody wants to know, like, what they're actually doing and how it's working.
Yeah.
And I don't claim to be an expert on the details of that. I'm actually looking forward to that session tomorrow morning. But what's different and unique that I think is drawing the interest and attention of the whole sort of water industry is, unlike something like the customer assistance programs that we've been talking about, where you figure out the cost of service and then you provide a bill discount to people who document that they're eligible for help because they satisfy certain income and household criteria and some format of that. The Philadelphia program is based on a situation where at the low end of the socioeconomic spectrum, the bill is actually based on your income.
Mm.
And that's, again, that's, and that evolved through, essentially a directive from the governing regional commission that they find a way to make a system like that work in Philadelphia. And it's the administration of it and how you structure it and how you decide what the bill should be based on income. I don't claim to know the latest, because I know it's gone through a couple of evolutions. Mm-hmm. I moderated a session at the AWA National Conference 2 years ago in 2016. And there was a presentation at that point on the early stages of the evolution of this. And I know it's gone through multiple pathways, but that whole concept of basing the charge for low income on their actual income, rather than a percentage discount of the bill based on eligibility, is a whole new twist.
Yeah,
and that's why it's capturing a lot of interest.
Yeah, it's novel, and it's the one place where that's happening.
Yeah,
so
yes.
Great. Well, I really appreciate again you taking some time to chat. There's we could go on and on. There's so much to dig into with this, but fascinating topic, important topic, and thank you so much.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Words on Water.